It just gets crazier every day. I'm going to play that video clip again in just a moment. Meanwhile, leaked federal documents, as I mentioned earlier, cite possible U.S. reopening from the coronavirus crisis in May, which is in 2 weeks. It's a three-stage process described in leaked federal documents dated April the 10th, developed by FEMA and the CDC. The initial preparation phase, as I said earlier tonight, would feature a public relations messaging blitz, which has already started, I'm told, lasting until May the 1st. This according to the Washington Post, which got the documents and analyzed them. The second phase, beginning May 1st, running to May 15th, would see mass production of test kits and protective equipment. And the third step, life would return to normal if local conditions allow. So there it is, Trump's brainchild apparently leaked as a trial balloon to see how it would float in the media. All right? Now, there's some other little tidbits which are really fun, and I'll put them out here on the table real quick, then we'll get to say hello to Henry again. Trump has announced that the worst of new coronavirus cases is now behind the U.S. A new proposal, not from Trump, would give Americans a $2,000 monthly stimulus check. That's called universal income. So that, as I told you months ago, that was going to be part of the outcome of this. Trump says the White House is going to release tomorrow new guidelines on relaxing social distancing. We'll have to wait and see on that one. Trump's entire coronavirus pandemic response has been called massively corrupt by New York Magazine. Vanity Fair says Trump's coronavirus power grab is dividing conservatives. The Atlantic writes Trump's coronavirus message is, quote, brazen revisionist history, end quote. And CNN finally reports what we've been reporting here, Henry and I, for over 2 months now. People might be most infectious with coronavirus before they even show symptoms. We know that 50% are asymptomatic and they can be shedding viruses right and left. So there you go. And then we get into the Wuhan lab thing and people are starting to look at Wuhan as a possible source of this bat virus that was taken in there apparently to do some work. Certainly helped by the $3.7 million from the U.S. All right, with that said, let me play the clip where Donald Trump is now threatening. I think certain dictators have done this kind of thing before. Threatening to adjourn, if not dissolve, both chambers of Congress so he can get his nominees passed. Because the Congress won't approve and endorse his nominees. That's the excuse he's using, but we know what he's really thinking. So here it is. Our president, and I'm using that term loosely, Donald Trump. Hold on, I got to get my audio up here. Some of these audio things are just crazy. All right, well, let me bring Henry on here, and I'll play it in a couple minutes. Henry, welcome back. It really is getting to be crazy out there. Trump's behavior strikes me as something out of a Shakespearean story. It's getting to be real desperate now. I mean, he really is desperate. No question about it.
Yeah. Well, he's desperate, and I think he's looking to just gain power, do a power grab, take advantage of the pandemic to declare its emergency, and he can do whatever he wants. And it goes from getting rid of any opposition in WHO by threatening to take away their money and to now, you know, get rid of Congress so he can go ahead and do what he wants without any checks and balances. And then this plan that you detailed with this leak, which there were already hints actually in the press conference today, so it wasn't even leaky, it was straight from the presidential podium. on, there's these states that really don't have that many cases, and there's some counties that haven't reported any cases, and da-da-da-da-da. And there's getting to be more and more evidence that, the distance plan, minimizing, has produced some effects and has really kept the virus from going totally out of control.
It has. But, absolutely. Yes.
But it's not anything approaching to turning the corner, and the numbers are plummeting, and the virus is almost gone. And it's time to return to normalcy. There are lots of pieces of evidence that indicates that things are actually quite dire, and New York may be kind of turning the corner, but many other hot areas are still heating up, and they're multiplying. And they're producing these numbers, which are higher every day, and the situation is
dire. Donald doesn't seem to notice that. He just doesn't seem to notice the numbers. This is mind over matter, Henry. Mind over matter.
Well, all he notices is, well, he doesn't even notice this, but actually, the number of commercial tests that are being run are actually going down. So the numbers are being artificially depressed by a lack of testing. And he doesn't even want to talk about testing. And in spite of a lack of testing, the numbers continue to climb. And just to kind of put them into perspective, I'm just
that used, by the way, for our friends, that used to be the way to keep the numbers down. Don't test. Despite the fact that testing is diminishing, the numbers are still going up.
Right. And the virus is definitely still on the move. And, it's getting, halfway through April. And as I mentioned yesterday, the U.S. is well on track to get to that 60,000 dead by the end of this month, and in 2 weeks. And so the idea that that's a high number and, we're probably not going to get there and this is just all scare tactics and it's really not that bad, that'll be demonstrated to be false in 2 weeks, as we'll be at 60,000 dead. And we're heading towards that much quicker than anybody else in the world. And so the U.S. is alone on how bad things are and how bad things are getting and how quickly they're getting worse. And
well,
so
you
just
said,
to give you an idea.
Yeah. You said a long time ago that we were going to replace Italy, and we have. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We are on pace to have as many cases as the rest of the world. So we're heading towards 50% of all cases in the world are in the U.S. And it's dramatic. Just to give you cases, the numbers right now, as of today, tonight, we are up to 644,000 cases. And next in line is Spain at 180. So we're at 644, they're at 180. Italy's at 165. Mm-hmm. France is at 147. Mm-hmm. Germany's at 135. UK's at 98. And China, officially, is at 84,000. We're almost 10 times higher than China. And we will be at 10 times higher than China in less than a week. Today alone, we added 29,664 cases. So we're at this 30,000 cases per day. And next in line is Spain that did 6,000. So Spain did 6,000 today. We did 30,000 today. Italy did 2,000 today, 2,600. France did 4,500. UK did 4,600. So that gives you an idea. These guys are all in 6,000 is a lot for them. 4,000, you know, tied for second with three or four countries. And Italy is down to 2,000, 2,500. And we're at 29,600. And we're not just leading in new cases each day. We're leading in new deaths each day. And again, it's by a wide margin. France has bounced back up, so they're back up to 1,400 a day, which a week ago or 2 weeks ago would have been a really high number. If you recall, about 3 weeks ago, Italy got up to 375 deaths in one day, and that was a big deal. It was kind of head and shoulders above every other country. They were up to 375, and then people thought it was leveling off, and then went up to 4-something, and then went up to 6-something, and then went up to 9-something, and then it kind of leveled off at 9, and now it's dropping back, and today it was almost 600, it's 578. And so France is at 1,400, and then the UK is second at 700. But we're at 2,500. So we basically have more than France and UK combined by a good margin. So we're adding 2,500 a day now. So we're up to we're over 30,000. We're at 32,400. So we're doing better than 2,000 a day, which is what it would take to get to 60,000 by the end of the month. We're up to 2,500 today. And that's, we're in that ballpark. I mean, New York is kind of leveled off, you know, it's kind of plateaued, but it hasn't plateaued at 100 or 200. It's plateaued at 700 to 800. So it's been between 700 and 800. Well, I think it got down to 680 or 670 or something one day. But I think it was 750 or so today. It's well into the 700s. And it does that day after day. And some of the data from New York, it kind of looked better probably than it really was. And one of the numbers that looked encouraging was a decrease in the number of intubations. So it looked like, well, you know, at least even though the number of cases every day is about the same, they're getting 1,600 new cases each day. You know, the number of intubations seems to be down, but it looks like they're down, and not because they've got patients that don't need to be intubated. They're down because they've decided that intubations doesn't really produce that good of an outcome.
Not getting the results they want, no.
Something like 83 or 86% of intubated patients never come off the intubations. They die before they recover. And so they've kind of decided that they will wait on the intubations and do it as late as possible. So they'll try all these other methods. And if all of these other methods fail and they absolutely need to get more oxygen, then they'll intubate them. But they're not going to intubate them earlier because it doesn't seem to be working that well. And it's very invasive. And they end up putting them into a coma, and, you know, they can be all kind of damaged to their lungs, even if they come off of intubation. So they're delaying intubation. And that's probably one of the reasons the number of intubations are down. It's not that they're going to end up ultimately intubating fewer cases. They're just waiting longer to do it. So while they're waiting for some of these patients to get even worse, the number of intubations is somewhat lower. And so that's kind of an artificial reduction. And then the other two pieces of information is that the CDC decided, well, they want a more complete picture, and they want to know about probable cases. So they don't want to just know the confirmed cases, but they think that if somebody dies and it says COVID-19 as the cause on the death certificate, that that person should be a probable COVID case and should be reported as such. And so now New York has kind of added that. And then yesterday, the deaths went up like an extra 3,700 because of all these cases that they've put in the probable category and have not been reporting. And now they're reporting them. And so that indicates that the deaths are significantly higher than had been reported. And then the second piece of news is the emergency calls for heart attacks. And they basically know what their baseline is for heart attacks. And they compared, you know, what the numbers were a year ago to what the numbers are now.
Right.
And they saw that a year ago, they would get, on average, I think it was 70 calls or so for heart attacks on a daily basis. And now they're getting calls for close to 200.
Okay, and now this goes back to what, remember I reported this a couple of weeks ago, that one physician in New York was saying they're getting 13 heart attacks an hour sometimes? He was shocked.
Right. And that a year ago, about 38% of the heart attack calls resulted in death. So I guess they either had died by the time they got there, died on the way to the hospital.
That's a high mortality rate. That's very high.
Well, today is 70%.
Oh, no.
Right.
That's a 70%, shock.
70% of the heart attack cases are fatal.
Or wait, what they got to do? Are they doing post-mortem coronavirus testing? Are they looking for heart damage? They know it causes heart damage.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
I'm pretty sure they're going to the morgue.
Get rid of them. Yeah, I get
it. Right. They don't have the beds. You know, they are dead, and they're just going straight to the morgue. And so they've got all of these extra cases above, you know, baseline that are being reported as heart attacks.
Wow.
And I would be pretty confident that if you looked at the death certificates of these cases, they say heart attack. They don't say anything about COVID. They got a call for a heart attack. They came there and they were dead, or they died on the way to the hospital. And they took them to the morgue because they didn't, you know, their hospitals are full.
I think you're 100% on. I think you're right on. I think that's exactly what's going on.
And they're not testing them. They're not testing them. So now they're going to start looking at those more carefully to see if they really should have been listed as COVID deaths. So that is indicating that the number of deaths are probably significantly higher.
Yeah, they're underreporting.
And not only that, but they have, you know, a death rate. They're keeping a score of a death rate, which is not a true number. It's just the number dead versus the number that have been confirmed. Doesn't have anything to do with whether they got discharged or not. It's just a number confirmed. And for New York, that number is now up to 7.3%. And if they go and they throw in the ones that are basically being reported as heart attacks, and that sounds like it's, you know, 100 to 200 cases per day. I think they got as high as 280 calls, you know, a couple of weeks ago per day. So there are literally thousands of additional deaths that are being recorded as heart attacks. And if they take those thousands and tack those on to the deaths, all of a sudden their death rate, not counting discharge, just dead over total number, including those that are on ventilators and are going to die, keeping those in the alive category, they're going to get to double digits. They're going to be up to 10% for a death rate. And the case fatality rate is going to be well into double digits. It's going to be 15% or so.
You called that very early on.
And I'm right.
Go ahead.
And that's what the number is in the United States. Not you know, well, maybe that's what it really is in China, but they're not reporting enough. Da 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 da. That's the United States of America. That's New York City. And that is
President
actually
Donald J. Trump.
And that is the Italian strain. And the Italian strain is taking over. It is going to be the dominant strain throughout the United States. And just to go over that briefly, because I got a bunch of questions on exactly what the Italian strain is, and does that mean that the vaccine's not going to work? And so here's a little bit of detail, just so you get an idea what I'm referring to when I say it's the Italian strain. The coronavirus is bigger than flu. It's like 30,000 positions, nucleotides long. So if you look at its RNA, each position, there's 30,000 positions in that piece of, in the entire genome of the coronavirus. Okay. And you got the basic sequence, which came out of Wuhan. So those sequences are known. That's kind of what the baseline is. You know what is supposed to be at every one of those 30,000 positions. Right. And then if you have a new virus, there's software that aligns them, and you can program it so it's real easy to see where the differences are as you scan through it. And you can identify how many of those 30,000 positions have changed. And the number of changes at this point, it's relatively limited. So when I'm talking about the Italian strain, the basic Italian strain, out of those 30,000 positions, 4 of those positions have changed. And there are characteristic change. I mean, each position can change to, you know, there's only 4 letters, so the normal one is one of the 4 letters, and it can switch to, you know, one of the other 3. And its definition is it switches to one in particular. So you've got what that position is. So those 4 positions are all changed the same way, and that's what the basic Italian strain looks like. So it looks a lot like Wuhan. I mean, it's only got 4 differences out of 30,000. So the vast majority of the positions are exactly the same. It definitely is, you know, the Wuhan original virus, but it's got these 4 positions that change. And that virus showed up in northern Italy. It's one of the first cases. It showed up in a couple of people. I think there were actually a couple. And that particular virus, it slowly has evolved and added a couple of changes here and a couple of changes there. But that strain has those 4 positions are the same. They've all changed the exact same way. And so it's very easy, and they go as a group. So it's very easy to take a quick look and look at one of those 4 positions and see if it's changed. And then if you look at it in a little more detail, you'll see that all 4 have changed. They've all changed the same way. But you can get a quick look as to whether it's the Italian strain or something else by just looking at those 4 positions. And you can actually just look at one of those positions and see if it's got the characteristic change to know that, yeah, that is the Italian strain. So I can look at the sequences as they come up and in literally a second or two see whether one of those four positions, I pick one or two at the very beginning, they're easy to find, see if they've changed or not. If they have, it says it's the Italian strain. And that's what I've been posting for the last few days, is to where, what those frequencies were. And today I did another set, the Wadsworth, which is the state lab in New York, just released another 39 sequences. And these were normally mostly from upstate New York. There were a few of them were in New York City. One was in Queens, and they were very limited. The vast majority of them were upstate, and they had most of the counties were covered. And out of those 39, there were only three that weren't the Italian strain. So the 36 out of the 39 were the Italian strain. And it's not just in New York City. It's throughout all of New York. You know, it's covered all of or at least most of the upstate counties. I posted those today. And that is the same trend. I mean, New York City, there were a large series that was done by NYU Langone, and then there's another series that was done by Mount Sinai. And they pretty much covered all the boroughs in New York and a little bit out on Long Island. And they showed the same thing. It's over 90% of the sequences are the same Italian strain. And this Italian strain is showing up everywhere. It's all along the East Coast. You know, it's the dominant strain in New York. In New Jersey, same thing in New Jersey, same thing in Pennsylvania. I assume these are probably eastern Pennsylvania. They just said Pennsylvania, but that's where most of the activity is.
You can see the story. It's up in headlines. If you look for all the, we got the key states up there for you every day, the totals there, which change moment to moment. But it says right there, upstate New York, SARS-CoV, which is what this really is, is largely Italian lineage. That's tracked by Henry, and he's correct. It's taking over.
Yeah. And it's not just on the, it's real high in the Northeast, but it's not just in the Northeast that all of the sequences so far from Idaho are the Italian strain. All of the sequences from Iowa are the Italian strain. Most of the sequences from Alaska are the Italian strain. And even in Seattle, Seattle had this ORF8 strain that I talked about initially.
That's right.
And it became dominant there. And that strain ended up on one of the cruise ships, the first leg of the Grand Princess, the one that went down to Mexico. And as a result, that first group, even though it spread throughout the passengers on that, they all disembarked without being tested and went, you know, throughout the United States and Canada. And I was tracing those a month ago or so. And they were the first case in Minnesota, and they were the first case in Alberta, Canada, and they were, I think, the first case in, I don't know, Tennessee or Kentucky or somewhere. And they were throughout the, and all over Northern California. These were all that same ORF8 strain. And in Seattle, the University of Washington was literally doing hundreds of sequences, and and there's the Seattle Flu Project. They were doing another series, and they were all coming up exactly the same. They were this original ORF8 sequence that was the first case in the United States. And then in Seattle, they actually added two more changes, and all of these sequences had that same background. There were two that defined the lineage, and then the one that was kind of rare, that was in the first case in the U.S., which was in the Seattle area, and then there were two more added. So those five changes were in all of the sequences in Seattle. And about a month ago, the Italian strain showed up, and it started showing up in some of the sequences. And lately, it's in between 60 to 70% of the sequences that were released. They're the most recent collections from Seattle are now the Italian strain. So wow. It is taking over in
right.
The Washington area. And it's probably also starting to take over in California. And that's the reason that initially California and Washington were having better results on bending the curve and keeping the counts under control.
Oh, they were or fate. Yes.
Right. That was or fate. And now they're all of a sudden saying, well, Los Angeles had quite a few deaths, you know, yesterday. And now those numbers are starting to
rate.
Go up.
It's going up.
And what's happening is, I'm sure, I haven't seen sequences from recent sequences from California, but I'm pretty confident, based upon what else is going on, what's going on in the rest of the country, that they're starting to get the Italian strain down there, and it's starting to give them problems, even
okay.
with the distancing. Okay,
got it.
So,
all right, let me wrap this up. Nowhere else have I seen or heard any of this being reported. Henry is the only one that I know about in the world, at least with access to the media, who's talking about the fact that the original ORF8 dominant strain has been replaced with the virulent, high mortality Italian strain that apparently came out of Iran and went to Italy and came here.
It
was coming in the back door.
It came from China to Italy.
Okay.
Here.
Point is, okay. No one else is talking about this. You're hearing the reality here. The mortality rate is going to go up. There's no question about it. I'm very concerned, and I've got a lot of things I want to put out here. We only have about 15 minutes left. But, Henry, this heart attack thing is very alarming to me. What do you make of that as a virologist? Is this part of the Italian strain, the mortality with his heart attack? This is a very big spike in heart attacks.
Yeah. I think that the heart attack is not necessarily the Italian strain. I think that the heart attack is a feature of just the Wuhan strain in general. And that, you know, that, I mean, there were pictures.
Well, we
of
saw
people
just dropping
over
dead over there. Yes.
In China. Right. Right.
So the bottom line is the virus can go after the heart. That's what we want you to understand.
Right,
maybe that's
right.
Why people are, I'm symptom-free, my lungs are fine, but it's going after the heart at the same time, even though the person doesn't
right.
know it. Oh.
Right. And I think that is not due to the Italian strain. I think that is due to the polybasic cleavage site. So the polybasic cleavage site allows the virus to infect many different cell types. And so instead of being limited to the upper respiratory tract,
it's not.
The virus can get into a lot of different cell types.
Damn.
And it can cause a lot of different damage in addition to just, you know, the upper respiratory tract doesn't cause much damage at all. That just gives you your cold symptoms. The lower respiratory tract gives you the lung problems, the breathing problems, but it can attack other organs, including the heart, and that creates a whole new set of problems. And I
right.
think that the
right.
Italian strain is, you know, probably able to replicate quicker and, you know, ends up attacking with a higher viral load. And so the effects of the virus are seen more frequently because it just does a better job of infecting the host, and it's harder for the host to overcome the virus, and it gives
this
the
is,
virus more time to move around
news.
and do more damage. So it
bad
doesn't
news.
Have to, it's already set up to go to different different tissues. But if there's not that much virus, you knock it out before it causes the other damage. But if there's more virus or is able to replicate a little faster or whatever this advantage is that this Italian strain has, you then have more people having the same types of problems. And then you get these huge numbers, which is why there are, A, so many cases in the U.S., and B, so many deaths.
All right,
and then
okay.
The other piece of news that just came out, just to put this in perspective, the paper that just came out of the New England Journal of Medicine.
Let me say, hold on. I got to do this.
Go ahead.
Henry just summarized for you, and what I want you to keep in mind, is that the 50% of those infected who are asymptomatic, I'm going to submit that a significant number, percentage-wise, of those people may be involved with a cardiac aspect to the infection of this virus. That's not good news, and I think that needs to be kept in mind. Go ahead, Henry.
Okay. The other piece of bad news came from a study that was done in New York, I think at NYU or Presbyterian. Anyway, I don't remember the hospital. It was in New York, and it was in the maternity ward. And they had a couple women came in. They were pregnant and didn't have any symptoms. And while they were there, they developed COVID symptoms. And they tested them, and they were positive. And they were concerned because when they originally arrived, they were asymptomatic. And so, it was clear that they were asymptomatic and seemed to be fine. And then shortly thereafter, they developed symptoms and they had the virus. And so they were worried that there may be more patients that were in New York. Patients are coming in pregnant in New York without any symptoms, but they may actually be infected. And they may be contagious, initially when they're asymptomatic, or they may become contagious as they start to develop symptoms. But, you don't really realize what they have initially. It takes a little while for it to come on. So they decided that they would just test all of their OBGYN patients. The only requirement to be tested was you were a patient. You didn't have to have any symptoms. You didn't have to have any history. You didn't have to have anything other than you were there, and they want to know whether you were positive or negative for COVID. And so they tested all of their OBGYN cases for 2 weeks. And guess what they found?
I give up.
13.5% were positive.
Oh, not good.
This is a general population. No selection other than their women that are of childbearing age. They all had that in common. They were all pregnant. They were all female. They were all childbearing age, and 13.5% of them were positive for COVID. So
all right.
That gives you an idea of what the level is. I mean, they keep saying, well, we got to do tests. We really don't know how many people are infected. We don't know how many people are asymptomatic.
Nope.
And they've got an idea now. They're testing everybody. They just started that. I mean, they just published this in the New England Journal of Medicine. Mm-hmm. They had the results for 2 weeks worth of testing. They're obviously not stopping testing. They're going to continue to test, see if that number goes up or down. But my guess is that number is going to be pretty solid, and it's going to be that ballpark. It's going to be 10-15% of the people in New York are positive. And maybe it's a little lower now because the social distancing issue efforts, but that's the type of ballpark number. they're talking about in New York. And that gives you an idea on why not having any limitations and say everybody go back to normal, why you'll have cases like you have, for instance, in the meat processing plant in South Dakota. And those numbers are going up. And to give you an idea why that's significant, apart from the fact that that plant does 5% of the pork production in the entire country, mm-hmm. is that the not only are the employees at the plant positive, there's 400 and something of them, but there's like 150 of their contacts are positive.
Correct.
And these are showing up in multiple businesses right. in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So it's now beginning to show up in all these businesses. It's going to spread in that city, and the numbers are going to explode. And there's no limitations there. There's no social distancing going on.
Right.
Yeah, the governor's going to go and write to Trump and say, malaria medicine, we're going to give it to everybody in town. But that's going to be a clinical trial. We're going to say, here, take this, and you got better. There you go. It worked.
It's not controlled today.
It's just kind of, here's candy. Here, come and get your candy, and this will make you better. I had this cough, and I took this, and 3 weeks later, I'm good to go. Worked like a charm.
A French study now comes out and says that the hydroxychloroquine does not help patients with coronavirus. A formal French study. All right? Another study says that hydroxychloroquine does not clear coronavirus, but it might alleviate some symptoms. Okay, there's that. Now, here's something I really want to get on. This is important. That's right. Here's a story from CNN. When the ventilator comes off, the delirium comes out for many coronavirus survivors. Let me just read this. Now, I got another point to make. When healthcare workers finally removed the ventilator tube from Jesse Vanderhoof's throat, he managed to eke out two weak words, "Call Emily." Vanderhoof, a 40-year-old nurse with coronavirus, was emotional and full of relief on the ensuing call with his wife after more than a week. But over the next couple of days, it became clear that while Jesse's body was on the mend, his mind was not right. He yanked an IV line out of his arm. He requested an Uber ride to take him home, a $200, nearly three-hour trip, even though he could barely get up. He talked in circles for days about going on a road trip and was obsessed with trying to rent an old-school Ford Bronco to drive himself home. He couldn't grasp what was going on around him. He didn't understand why the world was at war with coronavirus. This is his wife talking there. Now, that said, this is common, apparently, common enough to have written a story. You remember the CNN news anchor, Chris Cuomo, melting down, saying that he hated his job. He said, "I don't like what I do professionally," on a radio interview. So this is another suggestion. Why would he jeopardize his whole career saying this? He wouldn't, right? He says, "I'm trafficking in things that I think are ridiculous." Now that's suicide talk for a professional news anchor. Now, he had coronavirus, he still has it, and is this linked to the other story about when the ventilator comes out, the delirium shows up? That's a question, too. Did the virus go after the brain somehow in these people?
Right.
Possibly it did.
Yeah. A lot of viruses are neurotropic, and it's, like I say, this polybasic plebiscite lets the virus run around to a lot of different tissue types. And go to places that it wouldn't normally be able to go. And
neurological damage is another one we're going to have to watch for. I predict we're going to see more of it. Not to mention the cardiac issue. Oh, these are big.
And I think there's liver issues also. I mean, it's not a virus you want to have. And you know, apparently 1 out of 8 New Yorkers already have it. So it can create a lot of additional issues.
You ready for this?
Even if you survive, and even
you're
if
ready
you
for
go
this?
To the hospital.
Pediatrician, yeah. 80% of children may have coronavirus right now, mostly with no symptoms. So what happens then, ladies and gentlemen, if Donald reopens America for business and opens up the schools first? The kids, as Henry said the other night, will take it home to their parents and their grandparents. This is going to be brutal.
Right. And just to put this in perspective as to why, I mean, the pork processing plant is in a state that meets Trump's criteria for once it should open up immediately, because they don't have very many cases. They have less than,
less than 1,000, I think, wasn't it? Less than 1,000.
Before this outbreak, it was in that county, I think they had maybe 100 cases or so, and now they got 1,000. And
it's a Republican governor state, no lockdown. Okay, just keep that in mind.
Right, there's no lockdown, and even after this outbreak, he doesn't want a lockdown, and the mayor is suing to try to get a lockdown at least for the city. And mm-hmm. he says we're good to go. And they did that at the press conference. They started talking about, well, you know, there's 9 states that got less than 1,000 cases or something. That's not less than 1,000 cases, less than 1,000 reported cases. And these states are not doing a whole lot of testing. There's nothing here. Why are we going to bother testing? So they don't do that much testing. The virus is still floating around. They have these work conditions that are not viral friendly.
No. well said.
So that, you know, the virus is welcome there. You know, look, we've got a whole lineup of people. There they are, shoulder to shoulder, go to work. You know, dinner time. So anyway, the virus is opening up these states is. Once they start getting a little bit more, it's going to be a disaster. And another example, I got a little bit more on that nursing home. I told you about the one nursing home that was in Beaver County, just west of Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Well, it turns out that there are 400 residents there and 300 employees. So there's over 700 people that are at that facility. And that they've done some additional testing, and now they're up to 108 of the patients are now positive. There is very hard to get in for any information. They don't want to give any any detail, but there is a skating rink nearby that was under renovation, and they have orders to freeze the ice in case they need to turn it into a morgue. So that's what they're expecting. They got 700 people at that facility, 400 of which are residents, and they're literally going to have hundreds of deaths at that one location. And the number of long-term care facilities in the U.S. that have at least one, they gave the example in Montgomery County, which is just outside of Philadelphia and Eastern PA, and they have, I think the number was 45 institutions have one or more COVID positive patient in that one county. This is Montgomery County. So you can imagine how many patients they have in those 67 facilities. And the virus is just going to run through those, and they're not being reported. There's nobody going and keeping tabs on these. They're just kind of cases at long-term facilities. And if they test them and get some results, that's one thing. If they end up dying at the facility, well, that's a probable case because they didn't test them. And those are all over the country. Those are all over the country.
What games?
Right. So these are already in the queue here. I mean, these are already, the virus is there. The virus is in the facility. The virus is spreading. And most of these patients are going to die. And that's why these numbers, even with these limitations on exposure, are not going to have that much of a difference because, again, it's like the horses out of the barn. The virus is already in these facilities. It's already spreading. And these facilities are all over the country, including a lot in eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. And so these numbers are just going to continue to increase. And the idea that we're not going to have 60,000 dead by the end of the month is la la land. I mean, that's a done deal already. That is going to happen because the patients that are going to die in the next 2 weeks are already infected.
Exactly.
So that's where we are. It's not a pretty picture, and Trump's plan is a joke. I mean, he's got family members in his committee. Everybody's close to the vest. All of his business people, they didn't even know they were listed. He read off all their names yesterday. They had no idea. Then they got an invitation. They're going to have a
They didn't even
call.
Know. They were on the
list. No,
wow.
No.
And he named Jerry Kushner and the princess. Yes, they're on there.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're the only ones that are in person. Everybody else is just on a phone call, mostly listening in because they got like 100 people on it. So, I mean, most of them are just listening for information. And he's going to reading off the list for 10 minutes.
It was a long list, I was told. A hugely long list. And very few people knew they were even on it.
Exactly. And the only
this is preposterous.
Trump. The whole thing is preposterous. I told you. I mean, if you had to pick the worst person to be in charge of a pandemic, you got him.
you got him. All right. Thank you, Henry, very much. Talk to you tomorrow night.
Okay. Take care. See ya. Bye-bye.
All right. And all of you out there, be careful. We'll talk tomorrow.